Straw Man, The Real Story of Your Artificial Person, A Private Work by Clint, read for you by Josie. Preface, Part 5.
Remember, one's just reward is not always a good thing, any more than one's own actions towards others are always good. And so the golden rule is be good to all men, so that one's reward is always steeped in loving and charitable gladness, as is the anointment of Christ. To call this as anything but a perfectly reasonable, natural law, or to dismiss it as mere religiosity, is an admonishment that can only be made by a man lost in his own foolish, selfish conceit. For to him, the golden rule is to acquire more gold than anyone else, and that he with the most gold makes the rules. I am constantly amazed that most people can reasonably, through logical fallacy, contemplate that there can indeed be more than one version of what is the truth. Talk radio and news stations pride themselves in the fact that their hosts speak with different and opposing opinions from one another, claiming that all views are covered. But what does this really mean? It can mean no other thing than only one or possibly none of these hosts is speaking in actual truth. For truth doesn't come in a multi-pack of flavors and colors. It has no sides or versions. It is truth, reality, nature, or it isn't. Of course, words are never truth, only representations of truth. The problem is that we are born into a system of lies that are adjudged and called as the truths, and we believe in the existence of that legal matrix of artful words as if it were reality. We respect the power of the word over the reality it represents. And so even the measure of this legal word truth has no limitations within its meaning, being that which is declared and professed by man's consensus or judgment, not what is self-evident and self-existent of nature, source. Guttural slang, ironically, is measured by the typical publicly educated, middle-class, natural-born goyim in a public citizenship as less than proper and beneath the well-entrained dog Latin we are taught to bark by public institutions. We emotionally judge others below us, even as we are legally, officially judged by those above us, by our own mongrel usage of, quote, correct English. For just as the Bible warns in its poetic verse, "Let ye not judge another, lest ye be judged yourself," the term, quote, correct English, is of course an oxymoron, a non sequitur, having no source point or point of reference for such a description. I suppose from the devil's perspective that when one speaks in correct English, they are fulfilling their duties to that god of legal lies and grammar, for legal is always opposed to reality. The antonyms for correct include biased, false, imprecise, improper, inaccurate, invalid, wrong, flawed, inappropriate, inexact, unfitting, all of which just happen to describe the lower class of public citizenship in the eyes of God and the natural law. We might call this as legal or political correctness, where it is illegal to label anything by its harsh truth. Caught up like a fish in a net, we revel in our ability to speak the illiterate prose of the English, dog Latin language, and even seek degrees in education, a flattering title of measure, to be expert professors of that idiot speak, luring each new generation into our own collective net like schools of blind fish, so proud of our vain accomplishments. In the end, we are so utterly limited in our capacity to see and love the natural world through a poetic, spiritual eye that our words are completely detached from it as we personify and anthropomorphize all the world into terms of art in the third, legal person. Etymology also, as the supposed origin of all words, cannot account for the source of these artful, redefined legal alterations of every word when used in fiction as terms of any specific art. Any legal form is always that which is opposed to reality and nature. What is legal is therefore that which stands only in fiction as art, as that which is opposed to, in the stead of, or in the place of God, what is of nature. Fiction and fictional legal languages have no rules except those created by their legal, artful creators, legal gods. And so an appeal to the etymological origin of any word to disprove the legal meaning of that same word as a totally separate term of art in a totally different jurisdiction, place, is unfortunately a pure fallacy of logic. It would be like using the actual forest to disprove an artful painting of the forest. The creator of the painting was not trying to replace reality with his art in the first place, only to bypass and control it, and so the argument is void of reason or purpose. Do not confuse etymology with terms of art, fiction. For while etymology is ambiguous to all who use it in common, legal words are intentional property of the artist that recreated and repurposed them. An author copyrights the order of his words and ideas, but has no power to call as property the meaning of those words. The author of legalese is not you, for you are merely acting as a character in the state's commercial realm of fiction. So please get this through your head. You do not get to define or redefine any of the terms of any of the gods. Your use of the legal language offers no ownership or property in those words of art. It is you who are playing the part of the art, and so you are bound by the meanings of those words that govern artifice. And it is those same proprietary words that were used to create your straw man. Etymology. See dictionary. Legislative language is to be received, not necessarily according to its etymological meaning, but according to its probable acceptance, and especially in the sense which the legislature is accustomed to use the same words. Illustrated in the expression, to connect railroad tracks of different gauges. The courts construe words according to the common parlance of the country. Hence, a corporation engaged in removing petroleum from place to place is a transportation company. See statute. WCA, 1889. And so again we see that legal words are terms of a specific place, jurisdiction, are terms of a specific art, legal law, and are thus defined not by their original source, etymology, but by the gods that repurposed them into that artful, official use. Words are the resources of dictators. In other words, you will be seen as an utter fool if you speak etymologically to a judge of the words of the legal art and language. Their only similarity is their spelling. That's where the truth ends and the legal lie begins. And this is where the reader of this work must set aside his or her beliefs, loves, and the veracity of any word, for our strict belief system is the only thing that stands in the way of attaining knowledge. And the most important truth is that in the legal or any other realm of art, you have no control over the meanings of words, especially when you are in bond and surety to a proprietary persona and flattering title created in that legal or other realm of art. Puppets, persons, may only speak in their own art form, for that is all the law of persons and its corporate administrators, gods, recognize. And this is why a person, but not a man, is always a slave. Only when the man follows the person and binds himself in contract to that person, legal status, can the man be called, as the 13th Amendment declares, as one in voluntary servitude or voluntary slavery. For the choice to act falsely in another's person, property, is always a voluntary, contractual action. This is as well an obvious, self-evident truth, but also one of the hardest to contemplate and finally admit. For no one wishes to blame themselves as voluntary participants in making such a legal hell come to fictional life. While many lies and adversaries must be faced in life, it is perhaps the mirror that is the most dreaded. You may say that the devil, legal law and its practitioners, has a forked tongue. The devil's, adversaries, language, uses the same exact words that we do, but each meaning behind this legal devil speak is specifically intended and defined as the opposite of our common terms of reality and nature. Form without substance. The devil only works in worded contracts, seen and unseen, written and unwritten, and so we should always expect those legal words to be deceiving in any form they are presented. Not surprisingly, the royal societies refer to the legal language as the higher language, and to the common speech as vulgar, only useful for the control of the mass of illiterates as the nations of Goyim. Legalese is the king's language. To the legal societies and religious sects, illiteracy is merely a lack of juristic and scriptural knowledge, and this publicly imposed ignorance and trickery is the tool of their general control over we, the common people. Thus, the common or general language of the people, bounded and burdened by public citizenship, is viciously twisted and turned into a language of fraud and deceit, in direct opposition to life, law, God, and nature itself. This magical spell, the spelling and construction of words, therefore must first be realized as a state of despotic dualism, where we are intentionally and unwittingly tripped up on our own false comprehension and wrongful understanding of the meaning of legal words, as our common everyday words in fact mean the opposite of the true intent under which we speak them, even while unwittingly acting in a legal capacity, in persona. We are in Rome, and so we must learn Rome's language or be helpless under its deception. This is the realm of legalese, the legal language, where fantasy and reality collide to create the jurisdiction of legal law that so entraps all good men as one body politic under false names, nouns. And so it is the author's intent with this freely shared work not only to teach, but to instill in the reader an acute awareness of this shadow of dualism that surrounds and redefines our every action, and more specifically, our very use of words that do not belong to us. If the common language is good, then the legal language as its opposing force must be considered as evil. It is a game of destructively opposing nomenclature, matter versus antimatter. Every art form, be it industry, law, religion, science, medicine, or mathematics, has its own terms of art, opposing language, that only applies to the specific art and jurisdiction of that formal, without substance, realm. Art is always, therefore, nonsense, being not verifiable by the senses. Quote, it is a safe rule to apply that, when a mathematical or philosophical author writes with a misty profundity, he is talking nonsense. End quote. Alfred North Whitehead. A doctor speaks in medical terms of art, while a general speaks only the art of war. An attorney speaks in the artful terms of the emotionless, well-defined fiction of law known as legalese, while a mother speaks only with the truest intent and substance in each uttered sound, with such loving intent as can only be spoken by the abashedly undefined and ambiguous terms of a loving mother, with no artifice or form of art at all, a language of pure love and devotion dealing only in the senses. For no construct of language is ever needed to actually express the sense of true love. Art cannot love. Art cannot feel. Art can only represent in the coldness of lifeless simulation. And this notion is why we never comprehend our own failure to communicate with the practitioners of these various loveless, lifeless arts. Practitioners of the legal art speak only in nonsense, relating only to fictional things and characters, and using only resourced, artful terms. Their languages sound the same, but are vastly different when their terms are defined within each specific, uncommon art. Art is artifice, artificial, fiction, technology. It is form but never substance, just as a mathematical equation has nothing to do with the reality it describes and defines. Numbers are merely fictional words on paper that form ideas and give artificial answers that may then be utilized in nature's artful redesign by men. And so, true love cannot exist in fiction. Love is vulgar and animalistic to the legal mind. It is undefinable, uncontrollable, indescribable, and therefore it, above all else, must be defeated or used as a weapon of inducement to contract. The sayers and practitioners of each fictional art create their own unique, formal, official language. We can better comprehend these terms of art if we always remember their temporary, even proprietary nature, that they can be changed at any time to suit the needs of the state and its courts, creator gods, and that this is simply the case because those words carry no meaning and describe nothing in reality. What is real self-evidently needs no representation, unless what is attempting to measure the real seeks a fictional consideration and subversion of the real, and thus desires that some valuation in mammon be placed upon it. The words of that language alone defines the art. The creators of the art, fiction, therefore create a fictional jurisdiction, place, containing the laws of the art, based on its own predefined terms. Like a cartoon, the art defines the realm where the cartoon may then pretend to exist in cartoon form, whereas in nature, the design needs no words of art to exist, for all of life exists without man's artifice of language. Thus, we may reasonably refer to nature as the capitalized word creation, simply because man is not its creator but its helpless subject, needing its perfect abundance and balance to survive and subsist. Nature, as the only true existence and force of life, exists despite man. Man is a part of that oneness of being, and his actions determine whether or not he will continue to be a harmonious part or an expendable thorn in its side. Thus the highest law must be the law of its nature, which carries the same meaning as the law of God or the law of the Creator, for no other law, doctrine, can have even artificial existence without first there being a place for man to exist in reality. If man dies, so too does his fictions, but God's nature, life, and its law will go on. And so we may, for ease of understanding, call anything not created by man as a part of God, nature, as the creation that is Jehovah. God's nature is as the creator of man, not the other way around. Man is born into nature, creation, first as a living spirit. Only after this first real breath, source of life, may he then acquire as a contracted dis-ease, living, spiritual death, by being legally birthed, recreated, into the nations, and by consensually, voluntarily confirming that status, person, and following its false law. All creations of man are artifice, not being formed into self-existence with nature, and so man may only be the artificial god of his own artificial creation. And so man must be reborn back into his true nature, back into real life. He must follow the only truth and its law, and remain then untainted by the artificers of legal creation. This, of course, will be expounded upon greatly in this work. But please know that if this concept of what the word God means in its highest substance, and also in all forms that stand opposed to it, is not understood, then it will be impossible for any man to escape from that controlled, legal, anti-God opposition of the many legally enthroned gods of the nations. The jurisdiction, realms, of each art form exist only according to the terms of that specific art without deviation or spillover into the next. And so, as we skip along in a fictional, dead, legal life, person, from one artificial jurisdiction to another, like the controlled game piece of a board game, and from the artful realms and languages of paralegal, medical, scientific, educative, etc., we generally fail to recognize the source of our confusion and failure to communicate between artful, fictional, artificial realms, merely because we are publicly educated only to speak the common language of sensual, natural, human understanding. Perhaps we may become, in flattering legal title, some doctor or scientist, and actually learn some part of the terms of art attached to such a fictional profession. We certainly begin to speak differently to other fictionally titled residents within that same field of art, but still we cannot communicate with other fictional characters titled in different arts. The doctor may not be able to speak at all with the botanist, for instance, though their fields are quite similar. In all cases, however, the man pretending to wear the badge of false, flattering title in any of those legally created art forms, professions, must always remember to speak generally or commonly to the rest of the people not in his pretended world of art, even to his patients and customers. Among his colleagues, he may ever refer to this process of speaking without art as dumbing down his words, for he forgets that he is the dummy, agent, of what is completely unnatural and not self-evident. And so what happens when we attempt to communicate with the agents of the legal realm, such as the judge, the attorney, and the politician? Like attempting to commune with dead spirits, we fail by our use of the general language of the realm of the living to establish any spiritual contact, for an agent is always spiritually dead in its functionality as a property of another. The agent, attorney, of the legal realm is always under the law of its own false god, the creator of its flattering title, and thus having no capacity to hear the words of any terms but that of its own art. All other knowledge is extraneous to its sole purpose in fiction and commerce, Fictions know only their own language, and men are controlled by keeping that artful language an open secret, the common multitude being purposefully educated to be ignorant of the artful language of law that binds us. Our inherent awareness of reality interferes with our ability to recognize and thus commune with artificial things in artificial existence. And while these artful languages are spelled and sound phonetically the same as our own in common, we might as well be speaking a totally foreign language. The common, general, vulgar vernacular of language, being the general or default language of all men, yes, even those who cannot read or write, is what may be deemed as anti-art and especially as anti-legal. This makes all other artful languages and their expressions of fictional concepts and ideas as anti-nature, anti-God, anti-life, anti-spirit. There is only one language that allows any expression of true love and other pure emotions regarding the true substance of life, creation. It has no name, known by its feeling and freedom of expression, and is called in all nations as the general or common vernacular. It seems that most people do not stop to think that if there is a common language, then there must be an uncommon language as well, otherwise the description of common would be pointless and redundant. But in all nations, it is quite simply that the language of the master, the legally established gods, is never equal to the language of the subject or slave, the legally established goyim. This common language is the language of God only because when a man speaks it, he does so with sincerity, recognizing only the reality of nature in his untainted words. It carries no deceit in its conceptualizations, no representations, trickery, or magic spellings, and it places no artificial valuation upon anything real. It may subsist only in the pure of heart, being a language of utter consciousness and moral fiber unswayed by motives of gain, profit, usury, etc. Strangely enough, it is equally spiritual as no words at all, for what is spoken of in pure truth must necessarily be in regard to that which is self-evident and self-existent, part of God's pure creation, with no assignment of any fictional concept thereof. It is the sound of man spiritually contemplating everything by its actual existence and substance and source, without legalism or other designs against it, and with no supernatural, above truth, authority given to any name. Its use is in pure honesty, charity, and love, and its intentions thereof are pure to those ends. Its words seek no harm or alteration of reality, and instead embraces and worships everything as it stands in its own self-existence. But obviously, this utopian ideal of language is easily corruptible, especially when its artful, adversarial, satanic form is all but indistinguishable from its source. Art, in and of itself, cannot feel or express anything but pre-rendered judgment and the cold opinions of man within the artificially recreated, strict definitions. Art can only refer to form or status, to reality in name, noun, only, and thus never to the actual substance, nature, of anything. When a cartoon laughs, no real joy actually exists there. But the pure and priceless laughter of a joyous and happy child cannot be measured in any of man's arts, languages, or fictional designs. Such beautiful happenings in nature are self-evident and don't need to be faked or legally defined or scientifically explained. Laughter, in other words, though it has no strict spelling or rule of usage, is one of the most pure examples of this unnamed general language of God's word and law. The law of God is to preserve love and live purely and unblemished, not to prove or disprove love while assigning it a fictional status and evaluation through word magic. I was surprised to learn that this duality of existence is the basic theme of Bible scriptures, and specifically of the teachings of Christ. So how important is it to learn the legal language of kings, false gods? About as important as it is to learn to read and write, for the legal art requires not your ability to read or write its words, only your consent that it in its defined terms is voluntarily your highest law, whether you know and understand it not. For legalism is the devil's system of law, of a prison for debtors, the coded structure of a matrix for fictional persons, places, and things, subsisting only in a contractual dis-ease, the big legal lie. It exists and has power, artificial life, only with your pretended belief, love, and acquiescence to its false existence and authority, like a cartoon that somehow controls the real world, though it is in no way a part of reality. It controls your belief, love. It requires your belief, love, in its false existence to exist falsely. If we never turn the television on, thus never giving those fictional characters and magistrates bound to its realm our power by respecting its false images, currencies, and artful jurisdictions, then we may live and breathe only as God intended, in the purest of love and charity of nature, and in no other way, and with no art necessary. All jurisdiction is avoidable, which means all places, names, and nouns are avoidable. Quote, "The latter part of a wise man's life is taken up in curing the follies, prejudices, and false opinions he had contracted in the former." End quote. Jonathan Swift, Thoughts on Various Subjects, Moral and Diverting. Note again here that etymology and the language arts are two completely different subjects, one being the origin, creation, of words, and the other being a special and official reconsideration and officiating, recreation, of words under a certain jurisdiction, being utilized only in that artful, fictional realm and place, name of a fictional city, state, district, nation, etc. While etymology is certainly relevant to the comprehension of the origin of common words, each art redefines its own terms for its own purpose and best interest and is no way bound to any etymological or other outside definition of any of its own terms of art. In fact, its entire purpose is to pretend to be separated from reality. Thus, an argument based in reality falls on deaf ears in any of these artful fictions. One might consider this to be the difference between real life and the role-playing game of life, where that board game version requires players to assume a game-created character, or persona, that must absolutely follow the artful rules of the fictional game, and be bound in surety by their specified meanings. The game piece is similar to a person, a straw man in the legal realm. The legal life of a public personhood is no different from that game of artificial life, as we will certainly come to find out. And when it comes to the legal art, all jurisdictions are games of monopoly. A person is just an avatar, a game piece in someone else's game of monopoly. That person exists only in the game, and then only if the rules of the game, laws of fiction, are respected and followed over the law of nature. And the law of nations, though, it is always the creators of money, the mint, treasury, and central bank that reigns supreme, for the whole legal game and all its laws revolve around a national currency and the valuation of all things in it, in mammon. Despite our induced ignorance, we are all participating in the legal art and jurisdiction of government without comprehending the effect of its unique terms of art, that always prevalent legal language. We fail to recognize its structure in political discourse simply because everything we say is literally opposite of what we intend to say, standing unwittingly opposed to our very own will and intention, often without comprehension it is even happening. For the legal realm of government is an art form with its own higher version of the Latinized English language. A contractual relationship sets up its own scope of terms and confirms agreement to the laws of which those specific, artful word terms make up. Our motives are unwittingly diverted against our own best interests through this treachery of word magic, for every artful word is but a legal trap. Our strange illiteracy stems only from reading, writing, and speaking the general English language, no matter how skillful we may be in its use. The act of use does not require comprehension, only consent garnered by the action of using some person, place, or thing, name, noun, not one's own. Fools with PhDs shall be welcomed with open arms, but only with the invisible chains of their persons and flattering legal titles in surety. For government protects the masters of fools, never acting in the fool's favor. It respects and protects only persons, not men. It is the intent of this work, therefore, to expose the reader to this supposed higher language. It is higher only because we never look up. It is higher because we stand under, understand it without actually comprehending it as it stands in tyranny over us. We accept the lower, artificial class and status, false persona, as it defines us with its own unique, higher words and terms of art, even as we vote to support, choose to suffer, its control over us without comprehending our own ignorance of it. We even believe that voting makes us somehow naturally free, even though we must be voluntarily enslaved as subjects to that very government to be bestowed with this right in a corporate taxable franchise of voting for our own corrupt commercial rulers. We vote for our own slave masters, as legal public persons, as straw men, as the property of that for which we vote. Of course, common sense tells us that a subject has no actual, natural right to elect his master, any more than God's creation, creatures, get to vote whether it manifests as a man or a cockroach, both of which are equal in God's realm. But the illusion that a man is the president of us, as people, instead of a corporation created by Congress called the District of the United States, being the president, principal, of our persons in agency, is certainly prevalent among the mass of Goyim. However, voting makes slaves feel better about their slavery, and so the customary charade continues, and a new superhero puppet is appointed every 4 years. But nothing of the structure of legal fiction ever actually changes. There are no good presidents or bad presidents, for president is merely the name of a fictional, flattering title that has no such qualities as good or evil, and no man ever actually becomes a president in reality. President is a dead fiction of law, and a living man cannot become fiction any more than he may become a cockroach. But they sure do play the part well. In order to examine and contemplate fully such a hidden and powerful realm of word magic as has been retained within this work, we must temporarily suspend our own belief systems. We must stop loving, believing in, what is not real, so as to examine that fiction with the truth of our own reality and place within it. Only in this way was the author able to learn, kicking himself all the way each time I overcame my nincompoop mentality, my insistence that fiction is reality. We cannot contemplate the opposing shadow of darkness behind every word spell and legal concept unless we temporarily extinguish the artificial, artful, dark light, Lucifer, of lies that covers it. Hope, love, and other emotions just get in the way of comprehension, for they are never actually allowed as legal considerations, and so such feelings can only serve to confuse. Discovering the truth about the legal system we are trapped within, in other words, is like seeing a hotel room for the first time under a black light, where what is hidden shines only under that darkest of illumination. For while we may believe that we exist in the light, we are controlled by what is hidden from the true light of God's word, law. The reader is advised to take the following words to heart. Quote, empty your mind, be formless, shapeless, like water. Water can flow, or it can crash. Running water never goes stale, so you've got to just keep on flowing. Do not believe in styles, names and titles. Styles separate man. It's a process of continuous flow. Be water, my friend. End quote. Bruce Lee. Finally, I must here state that somewhere along the strange and spiritual adventure of creating this work, I realized that even my own intent had unwittingly been altered. While at first it was designed as an attempt to diagnose and save the patient that is our current society from itself, I am now composing it only for those who are somehow able to survive independently and in separation from society, and in separation from what society will do to itself and its members in its unnatural and unchangeable course of corruption, so that the same thing doesn't happen again in yet another false revolution, the circular history of repeated motions and acts of empire and nation-building. Round and round we go, empire after empire designed specifically to fail so that the aristocratic order of the Phoenix may again rise from its own recreated ashes of Roman rule, all the time being driven by the same international bloodlines of timeless, false, immortal corporate criminals. Do we allow ourselves to revolve back to where we started, only to allow our children and their heirless, stolen posterity to relive the past in the same forms of feudal debt slavery as us? Or do we strive to force ourselves to devolve back into something that works outside of this looping cycle of the manufacturers of ages and the systems of mammon, in a life free from any and all artifice? Sadly, we cannot free our children from legal bondage without first freeing ourselves, as we will discuss. Society cannot be saved, for society is only a temporary creation of man in the legal art, and all creations of man are ultimately only temporary. Society is a political, artificial body, Society is the public. Society is fiction. Society is not in any way spiritual. It is unreal, not of nature, standing not as a creation of God. It is only a recreation and opinion of man's imagination. It is not self-evident or self-existent. It must be forced and enforced by sanction of the men playing gods and administrators over it. In the end, only each of us individually can intentionally bring ourselves out of this dilemma, becoming shining, living examples and standing in spiritual pureness to those around us. And we must then find, love, and live in each other so as to express our like-mindedness and protect ourselves from those men who claim godlike powers to rule in tyranny over our foolish belief in the legitimacy of their legal, fictional methodologies and false systems of law espoused by corrupt institutions made up of their own patented proprietary words. Can you imagine living without money? Can you imagine acting and being purely in love, devotion, forgiveness, and charity to all men, even towards your enemies? This is our only future.
End of Preface, Part 5.